Welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. My name is Emmett Mann. Rate, review, and subscribe on every platform and on YouTube. Like and subscribe there as well. Yes, you see him. Sean Woodley, Locked On Raptors. Thank you so much for joining me, man. How are you doing?
Of course, man. Thanks for having me.
No question. You see, the reason why I want to talk to you is because you are one person. Like, how long have you been covering the Raptors? How many years?
9 seasons, which is crazy.
9 seasons.
Yeah, I feel very old this season. I don't know what it is. I feel like I've reached like a new age bracket of Raptors coverage, I suppose.
You could say the season has aged you, perhaps.
Yeah, also that. Yeah, no doubt about that.
Yeah, no doubt. Because in 9 years, I'm curious, where does this rank in terms of the difficulty to get through, where like every game is just like a little, you know, a little tick, just like a little prick on every single part of your body and just keeps on going until the next game where you're hoping it's going to be better and then it just isn't?
That is a really good question. You know, the Tampa season will always suck the most just because it was so grim start to finish, like getting booed in their ostensibly home arena and all that stuff. Like, it was awful. And I think everyone kind of expected it might suck going in, as much as there was some optimism about the team coming off of the season prior. So that's always going to be number one with a bullet. I always found that 2016-17 was kind of a slog, honestly. You know, obviously after they made the trades to get Serge Ibaka and PJ Tucker, it was great, but in the lead up to getting Serge Ibaka and PJ Tucker, that team stunk out loud for like a whole month.
Yeah.
And
oh yeah,
that was like a, you know, kind of a spirally moment going into that trade deadline. Obviously things turn around. You get the Kyle injury, which also stunk, but it led to DeMar kind of carrying the team down the stretch. So you got some joy out of that stretch run, even if it ended at the hands of the, you know, the team that we don't talk about, the, you know, the LeBron who will not be named. But yeah, I think this one probably is right in there. Right. And it's different degrees too, right? Like this is, I don't know what the expectations really were coming into the season. I think that's part and parcel with like how annoying this season has been, is like, we didn't really get a stated goal at the start of the year. And so it feels like I've been moving the goalposts. It feels like everyone's had to move the goalposts just to kind of give themselves some sort of end goal or, you know, objective in mind. You know, the championship season also kind of had like, you know, obviously the playoffs were incredible. That was a fun year. Watching Kawhi was amazing, but there was like this overarching existential dread that hung over that season as well. But you forgot about it real quick when Kawhi Leonard was putting up 35 burgers on other teams. So yeah, I think other than the Tampa season, this is probably the toughest one to get through. You could say maybe the 2014-15 season, which, you know, after Kyle Lowry got hurt or kind of slowly decayed after DeMar DeRozan got hurt, that became a pretty grim season too. And I actually think there are some pretty interesting parallels between that year and this year. So maybe that's the one that actually kind of resembles this one the most, but nothing will touch Tampa. And I think I'm very thankful for that, because I've had like this new low baseline of fandom set, and I hope to never dip below there again. It just doesn't seem very likely that you ever will, because of all the circumstances that went into it.
Freddie Gillespie actually saved the season with his Miley Cyrus rendition. Not rendition, he danced.
Remember,
that's what it was. It was a bit of both.
Remember when like it was like Freddie Gillespie, Malachi Flynn, and Kem Burch were like, this is it, baby. Like, Malachi's figured it out. Rookie of the month. Kem Burch is averaging 11-7-3. This is incredible. Boy.
Yeah.
Did not hold up, did it?
How far we have come. And the interesting part about the 16-17 season, you mentioned PJ Tucker and Serge Ibaka, and it was like last ditch effort to salvage the season. It seems like the Jakob Poeltl trade was similar to that, that they decided at some point, and you mentioned like we didn't have any expectations heading into the season. I don't think management had expectations. They didn't know what the season was going to go like. I think most of us probably thought that, you know, top six was the goal. And I think even like, you know, nationally, the goal was probably top six. And many felt like that they were comfortable saying that. Season goes on, it just never really turns that corner. And then the Raptors management is just like, what do we do? Do we go left or right? And they decided to go right towards getting Jakob Poeltl, a person that they've needed for quite some time. They could have traded for him last offseason, but they decided not to. And here we are talking about the Raptors again. So the reason why I thought it'd be fun to talk to you is that you have dealt with the ups and downs of this team for a few seasons now. And just with that in mind, looking at them now and what they're going to be during the offseason and also next season, there are questions that have to be answered. And these are only a few questions that I'm going to pose to you and that we can talk about. But a couple of ones that I think are really important for the team and management to decide on what their future is. So let's start with this. Starting very strong, I pose this question to you. Have you wavered as Pascal Siakam being a legit number one? Now, when I said this to you, I realized when I was going to go to sleep, I'm like, wait, he might think that I'm talking a lot about crunch time. Crunch time, fourth quarter, 2 minutes left, 3 minutes left. Is he a person that can get you a bucket? And I really do hate phrasing it that way. But sometimes, as you know, when it comes down to it, 2 minutes left, NBA Finals, Game 6. It kind of does come down to that. And we saw with Kawhi Leonard.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's all degrees with Pascal Siakam too, right? Like, I think, you know, just in general, if you think Pascal Siakam, like, if you're, like, building your framing of, oh, is he, like, a number one option around the idea of is he the best player on a championship team? No, I don't think he is. I don't think that's ever been the case. So I don't think my opinion has changed there. I don't think Pascal is one of the seven best players alive, and there are maybe seven players who can be the best player on a championship team. That's just the way basketball works, barring some random happenstance where a Pistons team loaded with incredible talent going all the way to the 2004 finals, beating the Lakers. Like, that doesn't happen very often. It's a very rare situation where you don't have one of these seven precious guys. You're probably not winning a championship, but I don't think Pascal is that guy. I don't think he's ever been that guy. I think he's flirted with maybe looking like he could be on the fringes of being one of those guys at times, but ultimately the shot making has never quite been at that sort of elite efficient level that you want. And that's, I think, fine. You know, as far as like late game situations, there is a track record of Pascal Siakam being part of very good crunch time teams. You think back to the 2019-20 team, they spammed Pascal Lowry pick and roll, whichever way you wanted to run it, Pascal screening, Kyle screening. That two-man action was the backbone of the second best crunch time offense in the entire NBA. They were really bloody good, and Pascal was a walking bucket in those situations. Pascal and Fred, their two-man action has been a reliable way to get late game buckets. Yeah. Do I think just like toss the ball to Pascal, have him ISO some dudes and go and score buckets over top of guys? Like, no, that's not him. Can he be a part of a very efficient crunch time offense? Absolutely. He's proven he can, but he did last year where he was everything for the crunch time offense. He was creating everything. And, you know, the initiating sort of, you know, guy behind every good thing that happened on offense for the team. And they were a very good crunch time team once again. And I think if you have the right pieces around him, then yeah, he can be your number one. If you don't have the right pieces around him, then no. And I think the question right now that is, I think, really fascinating and probably the biggest question facing the Raptors is that Pascal, Scotty, Yak front court viable with the lack of shooting across those three guys? And how does the sort of crunched spacing with those guys affect Pascal Siakam? Clearly, adversely, right now, he's not getting the same quality looks. He's not getting the same space to work with. Teams don't care about guarding most of the players on the floor when he's got the ball in his hands. And so you got to work through this stuff. Is this stuff that could be worked through and sort of ironed out going into next season? Probably. But, you know, I don't begrudge anyone who's already kind of looking at the crunch spacing, the fact that the Raptors are 21st in offense since the Jakob Poeltl trade, and saying, hey, you know, maybe there's some fit issue here that has arisen from bringing Jakob Poeltl into the mix. And how does that affect Pascal Siakam and his ability to be his best? And he obviously has not been his best of late. I don't know if it's a long-term trend to expect, or if it's just, you know, the acclimation period you tend to bake in whenever a new big piece comes to a team, but it's certainly something to watch and one of the biggest storylines for the rest of the season, to be sure. And, you know, I think with a guy like Pascal, who's not one of those precious seven guys or eight guys, whoever it is, who can lead yourself to a title, the context of the team around him is imperative. And the context right now, it's gotten better in some ways with the arrival of Jakob Poeltl. It's gotten more difficult in other ways with the arrival of Jakob Poeltl. And I still think this is a fact-finding mission for the rest of the season to figure out, all right, like, is this viable? Is this worth seeing again next year? Or do we have our answer pretty quickly here as to, all right, these are the issues and here are our potential options to go and fix said issues?
You know, what's tough with Pascal is that for a little while now, he has been operating from the middle of the floor, which is a unique place. Not many players want to, you know, gravitate towards that spot. But from his perspective, 100%. He's thinking, I have angles everywhere. I have shooters in the corners. There's a lot of space for me to operate. And probably during the offseason with Rico Hines, he's thinking, this is where I'm going to do my thing. And then Jakob Poeltl comes, and now there's a lot less of that because of the success of the Poeltl and Fred VanVleet pick and roll, which we'll get to in a second. But now he's having to operate from different spots on the wings a lot. And now that just the angles are different. The doubles are coming from different spots. The trajectory towards the rim is different. And he's probably just adjusting to that as well. I've been intrigued by his three-point shot because there has been moments where you're just like, wow, so that was a pretty, he got that off pretty quickly. It's a catch and shoot from different spots. It's not always the baseline. Sometimes it's a 45, sometimes it's above the break. And that's all well and good, but the consistency has not been there from him. But then sometimes you see flashes, like in that Clippers game, he takes Kawhi Leonard one-on-one. There's a double coming from Zubac, and then he spins around both of them and gets a layup. You're just like, wow, that was athletic. That was crisp. He was confident. And I don't always find that it seems like there's a lot of mental gymnastics happening in those moments where he gets the ball with a few minutes left and the spacing's there for him. It's an organized play and he gets the shot he wants. It looks like it's going to win. And then it just doesn't. They don't.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens. Like, you know, make or miss league, Doug, shout out Dwayne Casey. And ultimately, if you miss more often than you make in those situations, you're going to have your sort of your reputation's going to, you know, be created fair or not. And you know, I do think like the context around those certain situations and those certain late game moments, certainly, you know, it matters, right? It's not just Pascal is bad in crunch time or not. Like, it's what are the reasons why Pascal's not performing well in crunch time? And, you know, it also baking the fact he's played the most minutes of any player in the league since he came back from injury, right? Like, there's probably latent fatigue building up here too. Like, it's just, it's not all as black and white as everyone wants it to be. And I know the sort of, you know, there's a certain section of the fan base, and look, I'm not here to say who's right or wrong. I don't think this is right to think, but I know there are certain sections of the fan base who think Pascal's not good enough, get rid of him. Like, you just can't build a good team with him. I think that's wrong. I don't, maybe you can't build a championship contender if he's your best player, but I also don't really subscribe to the idea that job one is building a championship contender. And I know there's like, oh, what? Like, no, you got to walk before you can run. Like, build a good team first and then use your good position and status within the league to pivot into being great. That's what the Raptors just did in the last decade. Pascal Siakam, I'm sorry to say, for all the DeMar lovers out there, is a better player than DeMar DeRozan ever was with the Toronto Raptors. Just two-way excellence. He's better.
Yep.
Full stop. Yep. A better player. They, you know, there was no, for 5 years building that team with DeMar, 6 years building that team with DeMar, there was no, like, I mean, I'm sure this came up, but like, the Raptors weren't thrown off the scent of building what they had because the players on their team were not good enough on their own to be the best players on a championship team. No, they built something and then they got to the point where they could pivot into something else. And Pascal Siakam is the type of player, I think, who gets you to that place of being able to pivot into something else. And maybe he eventually is the guy who gets moved as the DeMar, as it were, in whatever the next big star pivot move trade the Raptors try to make is. But I still think he's very worthwhile trying to keep on this team to see what kind of heights he can bring you with the right team around him, with the proper context, with an actual center now. It's lovely. Yeah. What a beautiful thing. And I don't even know if we're going to get all these full answers on who should go, who should stay over the course of 26 games after the trade deadline. And that therein was, like, I think the argument against what the Raptors did at the deadline. I gave it like a C+. I could see the logic to it. I might not have done what they did, but they certainly painted themselves into a corner, and 26 games might not be enough to get answers to these very complex basketball geometry questions that they've kind of presented to themselves with the personnel they have and with the very specific skills and needs that Pascal Siakam has as a number one option.
And part of the reason, I'm sure, management made this decision is because they didn't know where to go, right? They didn't know what players would probably be the best fit for them. It was very unclear. And until they got a rim protector, or at least filled some of the glaring holes that they have, which, I mean, rim protecting was one, three-point shooting was another. And until you address one of those, you couldn't properly contextualize what this team was. And now that they got 100%. Jakob, which is good, now you can probably say that, okay, so these guys are going to fit. These guys aren't. Probably. I mean, I know Jakob Poeltl needs a new contract. I'm almost certain. I mean, I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but I'm pretty sure that he's going to be back with the Raptors. It's probably the other guys that you have to be thinking about. What are they, what's their status with the team? But in the end with the Pascal thing, I think, you know, you mentioned DeMar, and the reason why Pascal is a legit number one, and that's why I should have rephrased the question, is because of how many ways he can affect the game. And there are a few players in the NBA, like aside from DeMar, there are a few players that can impact the game on both sides of the ball the way Pascal Siakam can. And that is like, that's a fact. And there are players that can do it at a high level offensively, some guys who can do it defensively, but few can do it at like a top 15 level or whatever you want to call it, like Pascal Siakam can. And that is why he is a number one. But crunch time, I think it's where you have to really get into your deep bag. And especially with the Raptors spacing issues, I mentioned he's operating from different parts of the floor. With that in mind now, the spacing is not going to be the same. The reason why he loved the middle is because spacing is going to be optimal regardless. And it's so much easier to see where your open man is. Now, from the wings, from the 45s, baseline, whatever, it's a lot harder. The angles are just completely like it's a night and day difference. And he struggled with that a little bit. The turnovers were up a little, little bit of a learning experience for him. But I mean, the Raptors, like you said, have put themselves in this corner where they have to make some hard decisions very fast. And that's same for Pascal Siakam, you know, tonight against the Lakers.
Yeah.
You're gonna have to make some hard decisions on the fly, and they got to hope that he makes the right one.
Yeah. And I mean, like, last note on Pascal, cause I know we got other stuff to get to, but like, you know, have you ever known Pascal to be a guy who like confronts a problem and then not figure out a way to solve it? Right. Like the spin move is born out of, all right, I'm getting to the paint. How do I score here? Oh, this spin move works for me pretty damn well. That's my counter here. He's built in all sorts of counters and all sorts of different layers to his game over the years. He's not been asked to play the way he's been asked to play since Jakob Poeltl arrived in years, like really probably since the Kyle Lowry season back in 2019-20, where he was more of like a secondary creator on the team. Sure. And he was pretty damn good that season too. Like it's these guys are creatures of habit, and they are guys who, you know, if you do one thing one way for a long time, you're gonna get damn good at it. And then if you're asked to do something else, it's gonna take some time. And this team, again, they didn't grant themselves the luxury of time. They can still have time if they want it to run it back, as it were, as much as you can with the financial constraints that might be in place. And that they might still think that's the case. We might just be in a case where, oh, well, those 26 games are nice. What about 82 more? And you know, we get to see more of it. But I'm not even opposed to that. I think patience is like one of the great market inefficiencies in professional sports, honestly. But Pascal Siakam, to me, feels like the type of guy who can figure this stuff out and play better than he has. If he doesn't, then yeah, you're probably looking at some bigger questions. I'm just going to go with his track record of constantly improving and sort of tailoring his game to the things that are being asked of him. If you had asked 2 years ago, is Pascal going to be this kind of player who can be an engine of an offense that's pretty good, who can operate from the middle of the floor with such devastating effect? Like, no, you wouldn't have said that during the 2020 bubble, but then he did it. And so I'm willing to give him more than 11 games to sort out whatever's been going on over the last little stretch here.
All right, let's switch to Fred VanVleet. Something of a whipping boy amongst the Raptor fan base. Many people are like split on him, the fan base itself, on his role, his impact, how important he is. And it seems like, I mean, a lot of people call the media, Raptors media, apologists for him. But also I think at some points, you know, some people just don't really understand how much he impacts the game on both ends and how much he stirs the Raptors' drink, how much he helps them get organized. And then he does something like what he did the other day where he's calling out referees. And now everyone loves him again, at least for now. I'm surprised the fine was only $30,000. Paul George, a couple years ago, Josh Lueberg pointed this out, that he's had some comments about officials that weren't nearly as bad. And he got 35, but Fred got 30.
Maybe it's
No, go ahead.
It might just be like an admission by the NBA, like, damn.
That's what I was going to say. Oh, yeah, he's kind of right. That's what I'm thinking, too. Anyways. Hold
on, maybe we should go talk to old Benny T over there and see what's going on.
Or Scott Foster. Or all of them. How about a refs-only meeting? How about that?
Sure, be super productive. Lots of agreement, lots of level-headedness. It'd be great.
Yeah, I can just see Scott Foster with his hands behind his back. I'm like, all right, here we go. Here this guy goes. Okay, enough. Enough Scott Foster officials talk. He is slated to get a new contract this offseason. And do you think the acquisition...
Fred, not Scott Foster?
Scott Foster has a contract until the day he dies. Let's be honest.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be doing it.
Yeah, it's with Tim Donaghy's bookie.
You went there.
You can bleep that out for legal reasons if you'd like. That's fine.
No, that's okay. The people got to know.
Just Google Scott Foster, Tim Donaghy. That's all you got to do. Just Google it. It's right there for you. Yeah, it's cool.
If people on ESPN are saying the exact same jokes we are, then, I mean, why can't we? That's what I'm saying.
Totally right. Yeah.
Yeah. Does Jakob's presence, does it change, I guess, the value of Fred in terms of the pick and roll that they've been able to develop over the past few games, which I think has been very fruitful? I did a video about it, and some people were just like, oh, what happened against the Clippers? I mean, the plays were still there, just the shots weren't being made. But anyways.
Kawhi Leonard nuking pick and rolls just by being Kawhi freaking Leonard is what happened in a lot of those situations. And that happens. Sometimes Kawhi is going to Kawhi, as Raptors fans surely know.
Sure. And also, sometimes wrong decisions were made. Like, Fred a few times were just making the wrong reads. It's like, it's A or B, and he took B, and it could have been A, and then there you go. That's basketball. Probably next time around, he's going to make the right decision. Like, those are things a part of, you know, trying to be a good pick and roll team. But also, like you said, the spacing is not good. You mentioned Kawhi Leonard. He was a guy underneath the rim who's going to be like, I'm going to screw everything you want to do up and watch me do it. And that's what he was doing. Yeah. But back to the question, what do you think is Fred's immediate future with this team? And when I say immediate, I mean new contract. Do you think Jakob Poeltl's acquisition, does that change Fred's future with Toronto?
I mean, so I don't think Yak's arrival changes like what Fred is as a player, or like, or should change anything, right? Like, I think what it does is amplifies all the things that I think most people probably know, or most people who watch Fred VanVleet play basketball know. It's like, oh, this guy's a pretty damn good player. This guy is a very good playmaker. This guy is a pretty good table setter. This guy is a three-point shooter who, when it's going, it's massively important. And even when it's not going, the volume and the space he provides are massively important. And now you have an actual role man for him to benefit from and to amplify all the things that he's always done well. They just weren't necessarily amplified by a team that had no actual pick and roll attack, that didn't really seem to know what it wanted to do on any given possession. There's more direction now. And Fred VanVleet's the type of guy who's going to do well with direction and with purpose and with backbone sort of set plays that you can lean on. And I think been a nice sort of refresher in the, Fred VanVleet's a really damn good point guard. Is he the best point guard in the league? No. Is he a top 10 point guard in the league? Maybe not, but I think because of what you've seen with the chemistry that you have with Jakob Poeltl, who, like you said, is almost assuredly going to be back next season. Because also, like, if you look around at potential replacements for Fred VanVleet, there aren't really any, unless some disgruntled star is like, get me to Toronto. There's just, he will be the belle of the ball in the point guard market in the free agency class. If you can keep the belle of the ball, you do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, there will be some people be like, well, addition by subtraction. Well, A, that's not really how it works, especially with a player as important as Fred VanVleet. You saw what the offense looked like when Scotty Barnes was playing point guard for those three games after the All-Star break, right? Like, you watched those games in Detroit and Cleveland. I was in person. It was ugly. It was awful.
You went.
As great as Scotty Barnes could be.
Must have been glorious down there.
The Detroit game was a blast. Cleveland, it's just Fred makes a lot of this stuff work, and this team very clearly, as much as they need center play, they need steadying point guard play as well. And you know when you watch like the Clippers at their worst, for example, when they don't have an actual point guard, when it's all flailing, like that's what the Raptors are, just with worse players, when they don't have Fred VanVleet out there to be their point guard. He's a very valuable player, and if you can't get a player who's as good or better than him in his spot, he has to be on the team next season if you have any designs of being acceptable and good, which they very clearly do because they traded their first round pick. And so
there you go.
I think Fred's back. Like, I would be pretty surprised at this point if he's not. I'm not particularly concerned about the Magic wooing him down to Orlando to be the franchise savior. I don't even know why the Magic would do that in their current situation with Markel.
They got
Fultz
like 11 guards. They got 11 guards.
Yeah. They're fine. Like, just roll with it, man. And like the Rockets, really? You think Fred VanVleet's gonna stand over watching around looking at Kevin Porter Jr. and sink every single lineup he's ever played in his entire career? Absolutely not. Like, he feels like a Raptor. I think he's gonna be here. There's no one to replace him with. You you know, maybe there's concern about the decline, you know, physically and all of that, but like very clearly the offensive talent is still there. Maybe sure. there's a bit of a defensive drop off, but guess what? Plenty of teams survive with point guard defense. That's not all world Gary Payton in his prime level, right? Mm. Like that's the position you can most scheme around defensively. And I think you can make it work with Fred. He's really important and there's no obvious replacement for him. And you simply can't go into next season without those skills on hand. Otherwise, you're going to be in the same position you were this year, just with no point guard skills instead of no center skills. And you will be a directionless husk of a team that's going to go nowhere.
Unless they just decided to replace him with Jeff Doughton Jr.
Well, duh.
Unless. That is the answer. I like Jeff. I don't want to joke on him. I enjoy watching him play basketball. Point of attack defense, I think, was, yeah, he's terrific. You talk about point of attack defense. Jeff's pretty good at it. His future is another conversation for a different day. But I think Fred's actually has been better of late. And we never understand what players are going through physically. Like I was talking to Scotty Barnes, his manager, a few weeks ago on the other Strictly Hoops podcast. And he just said it like, at a, you know, nonchalantly, like, yeah, you know, Scotty was injured for a little while early in the season, so his defense was really bad, essentially is what he said. I'm just paraphrasing, but those are things that happen. And when we're saying, you know, Fred doesn't look like he's moving very well, things look kind of off, he looks kind of slow, why is he limping in the third quarter? Maybe he just was hurt, and that's just how it is. I don't want to go down that path too much, because like you play the games, and however the person performs is what you have to critique off of, but it does seem like he has a bit more bounce to his step these days. And, ask Bradley Beal.
Really, since January, he's been, I'd say since the calendar turned, he's been very good. And having Yak is just like a whole new breath of fresh air for him, too.
Sure. And Bradley Beal found out that, you know, his point of attack defense ain't bad. He found out in that when he decided to switch on to him. It's like, oh, yeah, bring Fred VanVleet over here. Let me go cook on him. And didn't go very well. So I think there has been some progression there.
Bradley Beal overestimating his own abilities? No, crazy.
Bro, what I'm seeing from him in late crunch time, I couldn't believe it. I was watching the game, what was it, against Atlanta? And Kyle Kuzma was asked about it afterwards. And he was trying to be nice, I suppose, because he was asked, and fairly enough, you know, what's going on with the crunch time offense? What's going on with the fourth quarter offense? And he's like, you know, kind of what it is right now is like, we just let Brad do whatever he wants and we just live with it. And Brad's making a lot of bad decisions. I've been actually kind of shocked for a guy that seems very humble, very liked amongst, you know, his NBA peers, how he could be so, for lack of a better term, selfish in those situations. Kind of selfish.
Yeah. I've never really been a Bradley Beal guy myself. I thought John Wall was always the guy that made those teams hum when they were good. And, you know, my lasting image of Bradley Beal's like career, I think, is going to be thinking back to all of the times he hit a three to cut the Wizards deficit from 15 to 12 before mean mugging at the bench, only to lose by 18 later. Like that's the Bradley Beal experience to me. I'm sorry, Brad, but like, man, I guess that's what you get when you just decide, yeah, I'm a Wizard for life, baby. You get Wizard's ass reputation, I suppose. And I don't think he's shaking it anytime soon.
Defense is for wings. I'm not a wing. Anyways. With Fred now, I think there's been progression defensively. I think we're seeing the benefits of him having a Jakob Poeltl type, and he's been missing that for a few seasons. And Lord knows point guards could probably use that. It's pretty evident. His shooting ability, his ability to get downhill. And also, there was a transition period for him, doing more pick and roll. He had to remind himself, like, how do I do this again?
I can pass to a big man?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. It's like angles, wraparound passes, like over the top passes. He had to just get back into that groove again since it's been so long. And we remember, you know, Serge Ibaka, Fred VanVleet, that two-man combo that has never really worked out, right? Mm-hmm. He's grown. He's gotten a lot better at that. And Jakob Poeltl, obviously his skill set is another conversation, but he's also very good in terms of pick and roll offense. Rolling ability.
What a delightful player Yak is, man. Like what? Man. Just like that's a basketball player's basketball player.
I was thinking about this. Do you think the three most likable players on the team right now are Yak, Jeff Doughton, and Scotty Barnes?
Ooh.
From the fan base, because I find that everyone else is being critiqued a lot. So.
Yeah, I mean, we can get into Scotty Barnes if you want, because maybe he deserves a little bit more critique than he gets. I don't think he's some special golden boy necessarily. I think he's awesome. I think he's going to be excellent. But, you know, some of the stuff he does also doesn't really help matters all that much either. Yeah, that's Yak is clearly the golden boy, I would say. 100%.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
On the right day, people love Boucher because like he throws cool dunks down and stuff.
That's true.
I feel like OG is pretty beloved, honestly. Like I don't think OG gets too much flack. I think he's
people have soured on him when they felt like he wanted to be
sour
traded.
On everyone, man.
I know,
can't
man,
handle,
but
like,
he was
streak. It's absurd.
He was Prince OG, and now that the dialogue around him isn't that anymore. Now it's like, oh, this guy wants to be traded. Oh, why is he missing all these shots? He's only taking like seven shots a game now. It's not 20. Mm-hmm. His offensive role has like diminished quite a bit.
Are Raptors fans just like naturally inclined to overhype their own guys only to their disappointment later when they've overhyped said guys, and they're very good basketball players, they're just not the dudes that they were overhyped into being? I mean, I'm sure every fan base does this, but it feels like it happens a lot with the Raptors.
Well, he didn't become Kawhi Leonard, at least not yet, so
what
also
failure.
He didn't say
an
that.
Absolute failure exactly. Of a player.
Jeez. Okay. Well, I mean, I think Fred's going to be coming back. And like you said, the free agent market isn't great. I wonder, another lot of separate conversations. This is why I limited it to five questions or so, because there's too many things to talk about, but how much are the Raptors willing to invest into this team next season? You know, if Fred indeed does want $35 million a year or whatever it is, and they do sign up to that contract, now you're getting very, very pricey throughout your lineup, and you have more players next offseason that you got to give more contracts to, more extensive contracts to. Precious Achiuwa, we got to get into that conversation too at some point. You know, what's he going to be next season? How much is he going to command? Clearly, Masai wants him around. So some tough money conversations for the Raptors are coming up. However, that's not our problem. Bobby Webster can manage the stuff himself.
Look, no further. Dude wrote the cap. I trust him completely, man, to figure that part out. I've stopped caring about cap machinations because like they'll figure it out. That's kind of my general philosophy, is like they're smarter than me when it comes to it, and they know where to kind of trim the dollars, know the little loopholes. Half the loopholes were written by Bobby. He's walked through these loopholes many, many times before. So the cap stuff they'll sort out, I'm sure.
What they did with Nando DiColo at the trade deadline. Chef's kiss. Chef's kiss. Glorious, glorious stuff. That's when you're like, just leave it to Bobby. He'll figure it out. I'm sure Masai does that too. Is Masai good at math? I don't know, but I know I'm not. So I'm not going to go down that path. I'll let Bobby do it.
It's not my job to worry about that part of the whole deal. I'm not on the payroll staff.
Okay. Let's talk about more raising of things. That's a terrible segue. What could raise the ceiling of this year's team?
Is it between now and the end of this season?
Yeah, if there's something, like obviously it's all going to be internal at this point. You could say there's some players that have underperformed. There's a few traits that a few players could just gain through wizardry, or maybe more practice time. I don't know. Maybe more confidence. And there are a few players that I think that could help this team stabilize their minutes in certain portions of the game, or have better minutes in terms of starters, in terms of crunch time, whatever the case is. But are there a few things that come to mind for you that think, you know, if this guy was doing this, or if this duo was doing that, Raptors could actually be a little bit better and maybe, you know, play in first round. Maybe they just make it a little bit more competitive. Even at this point, like I would say, if they're able to force whoever they face in the first round, if they get there to like five or six games, I would consider that a win, all things considered, because Boston and Milwaukee, they're out of this world.
They're ridiculous. They're total buzzsaws. You know, for me, I think within this season, it's tough, right? Because I think they're working with such a limited time to get the offense sorted out. The offense is the thing. I think the defense looks pretty good. They're ninth in defense since the Pirtle trade. Like, that's great. And I think that's legit. I think when you look at it, it makes a lot of sense. They're enormous. Yak cleans up a lot of the messes. It makes perfect sense to me that they've been a top 10 defense in that time. The offense was my concern coming in after the deal. And I talked about this on my show a bunch. And
Yeah.
You know, after a season where they kind of flirted with top 10 all season long, they've lost a little bit of that magic. And I think it is because of the lack of shooting. It's just, it's undeniable. In the NBA, you gotta be able to shoot. And for me, if Scottie Barnes was just like, if he could have a heater here, what a dream that would be. If you get the first month, he was like crazy hot in the first month of the season, right? Like if you can get that going from deep for Scottie Barnes for a month straight here, that changes the game entirely. And ultimately, like that to me, if you're someone who thinks this team can become something meaningful down the line with most of these core pieces, it's because you think Scottie Barnes is going to learn how to shoot. If he does learn how to shoot, like things get real tricky if he can't shoot, because like the spacing will always be a problem. And I'm not going to lie, I'm a little concerned, right? Like I think he's going to be a very good player. He's 21 years old. Like I'm not going to be all like he's a bust or anything like that, but like, and like he obviously impacts the game even when his shots aren't falling, as we saw, you know, we see all the time, right? He can just kind of turn it up aggression wise. He can go smack the offensive glass. He can do all that stuff. It's great. If he can't shoot, it makes the geometry of the Raptors a lot harder. It makes probably some uncomfortable questions pretty clearly in like the focus of this offseason, even if they don't think there's actually a pathway for him to improve from downtown. And it's not even just three-point shooting. His two-point shooting, he is down pretty significantly in every single area of two-point range this season from where he was last year. The only area in which he has improved his three-point, his shooting at all this year, is from three, where he's gone from 30.1% to 30.3%. Every other part of the floor, he's shooting worse for him. Worse at the rim, worse in short floater range, worse in mid-range, worse in short mid. Like, he's been awful on twos. Yeah. And if this team is going to find a way to make it work with Pascal, Scotty, and Yak, one of two things has to happen, probably both to some degree, is Scotty's got to be a better three-point shooter. I think Pascal, even himself, maybe a little bit better as well, but 34-35% I think you can get by with. And Scotty's got to be better there. He also has to become a guy who can be instant twos for you, because they're not going to win the math battle right now, three-point-wise. Where they can win the math battle, and where they lost it miserably against the Clippers on Wednesday, is going 24 of 64 from two-point range. You have to be a team that lives at the rim. And I think they can, right? Like Yak never misses. That's a big, big asset. If you can find a way to work the spacing with those guys where there's always someone who's in the dunker or someone who's there to put in an easy opportunistic bucket, leveraging what the defense is doing to overcompensate for Yak's floater or Pascal's mid-range game or whatever, and you can leverage that into easy two-point buckets, great. You got to finish those two-point buckets. And they have not done that. You know, Pascal's had issues there as well. And, you know, if you're not going to be a team that lives from three-point range, you have to live at the rim. And their avenue to living at the rim is those three guys being lights out when they get those opportunities in close, because they're going to get them. They get a lot of them. They're both, you know, Pascal and Scotty are walking paint touches. You got the pick and roll game with Fred and Yak, which gets Yak deep in deep position all the time. You have to make good when you get to the rim. It's not easy to get to the rim in the NBA. The Raptors are actually pretty decent at it, I think, all told. But they have to
finish
part. Otherwise.
It's the final part.
Yeah, like you have to put those bunnies in. Otherwise, it's going to totally nuke your offense, which it has so far, right? Like since Yakupertl arrived, they've stunk from two-point range, and that has been totally debilitating to their offense. And if they can just get Scotty back to where he was last year, where he was like 61% at the rim as opposed to 57% at the rim, if you can just get slight incremental improvements from these guys from those areas where they typically live, where they get to those spots all the time, Scotty walks into that short floater range whenever he wants. Those got to fall. And then the three-point shooting also has to be there as well, because it's the NBA and everyone scores a bazillion points a game. You need three
except
to score
the Raptors
a bazillion points. Yes. So for me, exactly. They've picked the wrong time to skew defense for sure in terms of like NBA history. But like Scotty's touch both in and out, that is the key to the ceiling of this team being raised, to keeping the guys you have now and having it be a viable team that could be a real heavy hitter in the Eastern Conference one day. I still think they can be pretty good if you don't get that full development from Scotty, just because they have good players. Their defense is going to help drive them to wins. But to me, like that Scotty shooting both now and in the future is so bloody important. Otherwise, Pascal maybe becomes the guy you have to look at shipping out in exchange for better shooting, which would be a really grim and terrible thing to happen, because I love Pascal Siakam. I'm probably like too clouded, and I probably can't logically think about the idea of moving on from Pascal because I'm far too emotionally attached to him. He's like my second favorite Raptor of all time behind Kyle. I could cop to that. That's fine. But I also think you shouldn't be in the business of trying to move on from top 15 players in the league, all NBA players, because the fit is weird with another guy on your team. And I think you got to just hope for that internal growth. Mm-hmm. Is Scotty capable of that? I don't know. But and I would skew towards thinking he can do it to some degree. Maybe he's not going to become Klay Thompson, but can he become a passable three-point shooter and get that touch from two-point range back? I think that's on the table, but it's got to happen. Otherwise, this whole thing, I think, kind of falls apart.
It's amazing how much these questions inform each other. It's like the Raptors need more shooting, and that would help Pascal Siakam in two-point range. It would help Scottie Barnes in two-point range. It would help Fred VanVleet in two-point range. The best portion we saw from Scottie this season is when he was in that Jakob Poeltl role, where he was screening and rolling. Mm-hmm. He was more of an initiator from the nail area, and he was thriving at that point. Like, it's funny with him that he's capable of more, but they need him to be doing something else. And nowadays, especially when the Jakob and Fred pick and roll is so good, they need him to be a spacer, and they need him to hit shots. And other teams are like, yeah, we'll let him do that. That's cool. No problem. You want to let him shoot four or five threes a game? That's totally fine with us. So you're right. That is one of the things. Did you catch a few weeks ago, Nick Nurse, he was asked about Jakob Poeltl, and he was saying, someone asked him, he's not a three-point shooter. And then Nick under his breath said, not yet. I was like, ooh, what's on your
good
mind?
Good luck, man.
Let's start with free throws first. But I like thinking.
Yeah, I like the thinking too. I don't think there's any, chance in hell it happens. But thing too, I think, to keep in mind as well, we talked about it with Pascal, right? He's adjusting to something new that he's not been doing for a while. Like, this has been a strange second season for Scottie Barnes. He's been asked to do a lot of different things in a lot of different spots. He's played point guard. He's been a center. Mm-hmm. Now he's playing this more sort of wing role. And like, there are certainly moments and flashes where it's like, oh my God, when this guy puts it all together, this is going to be an unstoppable force of a human being on a basketball court. And that's still one of his outcomes, right? Like, there's still an outcome here where he is just so physically imposing and so like adept with his playmaking that he becomes one of the best players alive. Do I think it's likely he becomes one of those seven guys who can lead a team to a title? Probably not, because I think it's unlikely for any player to become that because there's only so many of them. But like, he's got, I think, just like the tools and the flashes that make you think, hey, that could still happen.
Sure.
And I think you got to hopefully, see if he can kind of have a bit more of a sort of steady role next season, kind of define what his role is going to be in the offseason so he can focus in on very specific development related to that role. It's not that I think you should, funnel him down one development track or anything like that, but he's very clearly got the screening, middle of the floor surveyor type thing kind of down. Like that feels like a thing you can kind of take to the bank as a way you can use Scottie Barnes. But in this wing more sort of centric role, he hasn't figured it out yet. It's been 11 games. He probably will figure it out to some degree. And, there were flashes. What was it in the second Wizards game where he hit like three mid-range jumpers? And it's like, oh, all right.
Cool.
Now we're talking. Like, if that stuff happens more often, then you're cooking with gas. But that's, as we're talking about sort of swing skills and things that are going to raise the ceiling, like I feel like they've built this team with the idea that Scotty is the guy who was their vehicle towards upward mobility. He's got to make good on it now. And I'm not saying he can't or won't, but that's the reality they're in right now. There's a lot riding on Scotty Barnes figuring this thing out so everything else can fall into place.
And what you love about him is how malleable he is on the court. And like, he's playing backup 100%. Point guard for the Raptors now. Right. And that's great. I love seeing the two-man actions with him and Gary Trent Jr. I love seeing him, just like spam that pick and roll with Gary and him in that second Wizards game where Gary had 26 points or whatever. And he was making those play calls. Mm-hmm. So that was him on the court. And that's where you're seeing that headiness. He wants the ball in his hands, but at the same time, we mentioned Fred VanVleet. Why do you need him on the court? Is because Fred's smart with the ball and the Raptors can't turn over the ball and they need to win the possession battle because they don't have shooting because they can't hit twos and all these things, like I said, inform each other. And so it's hard to take the reins off and give Scotty, go out there and do your thing when you're trying to win games. And he's just not ready to be a full-time point guard yet, but he's certainly ready to be a playmaker. And so the Raptors are trying to balance that. I would love to see him find ways to be more aggressive throughout a game. And that's, fourth quarter Scotty is perfect, but, and I know you can't sustain that for 48 minutes, but I would like to see him be more assertive with his offense, and that is in his control. I mean, I understand that he wants to read and understand the teams. He wants to get everyone else involved, but sometimes they just need you. Like, you are the play at points, to quote CJ Miles. You are the play. Right. So when you collapse the defense, when you bring a double, then do your playmaking, make it happen for yourself. And then you are doing exactly what you want to do. You want to, you're passing the ball, you're rebounding, and you're just going to get into tune with the player that you want to be sooner and for a longer duration of the game. You mentioned the 3-point shooting for sure. Pascal Siakam, similar scenario. He's improved quite a bit as a catch and shoot player, and he's been more than willing to be that off ball player. I see him in the corner sometimes, just like ready to go. And sometimes it goes in, other times it doesn't. But in 2023, he's been fairly consistent from three. And that's been a positive sign. Precious Achiuwa. I don't want to get all over him a little bit. You know, he's had a rough stretch. We talk about players like finding themselves in new roles, and he's had to make a pretty big transition himself with Jakupero coming in. And I think he's still figuring it out. But I mean, we saw what he did last season, and he was an instrumental part of them having the second half that they did. If he's able to get in tune with that for like 10 games here, it would be really helpful.
No doubt, man. Like, you talk about the ceiling raising, and Scotty is obviously the first and foremost guy you think of there, but Precious is part of that too. And we saw it last year when Precious was a catch and shoot, you know, could drive off to catch wing type, essentially. He was kind of playing like a point, like a two guard more than anything else. Like, that was a really damn good player who changed a lot for the Raptors. And, you know, you think about the development of Scotty Barnes as well, right? Like, if you're able to kind of pair him with a Precious as a pick and roll partner, but it's not just pick and roll, it's pick and pop. That's another thing he can work on, those pick and pop reads, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Have an actual shooting threat to run pick and roll with in a way that Jakob Poeltl is not. Can you negate the lack of shooting Scotty has by having a pick and pop partner as sort of a backup big option who you can work with and mix in and have a different look? That's super important. And Precious, you know, his defense plays, right? He doesn't have to do much offensively to justify being out there because he's a menace defensively. He's so bloody good, can stay in front of anybody. And really, I think he's just like really special on that end. But it's just like the slow decision making on offense, the sort of baffling, just like holding the ball for too long and then making a really just like ludicrous read out of it. Yeah. That stuff's got to go away. I don't know how you teach that stuff. I'm sure they're thinking about how you teach that stuff. But like, Precious is at his best when he's not thinking, right? And I do wonder if maybe that sort of more wing-centric role is better for him. And maybe that comes on this team. Maybe it doesn't. Like, maybe he's a guy you use as a potential like trade sweetener in the offseason. I don't think I'd like that. Like, I want to see Precious thrive on this team.
But I
like
hear what you're saying, though. I hear you.
Yeah, like, it's fit, right? It's the complementary pieces. Do they come together to make a team that makes sense when you lack a super-duper star player? The fit is extremely important, and the way the puzzle pieces fit is massive. And if he's not going to shoot, that's a big problem. This is a team that needs shooting and could definitely use shooting from a big man like Precious to offer different looks. Even if you're working, you know, you're closing a game, Yak's having trouble in a certain matchup because, you know, he's more of a drop big and they're asking him to come up too high and he's getting blown by. Precious as a foil for that, as a guy who can switch everything and be just a total game changer defensively with a different look than Yak, that's amazing, but it only works if he's doing enough for you offensively. And I wonder if the sort of interior decision-making stuff is just maybe not really his bag. He's always kind of struggled with that, but if you can put him out on the wing, put him on the perimeter, have him catch and quickly attack off of drives, use that crazy first step he's got, use the 3-point stroke, which doesn't look broken. It just seems like it's off for whatever reason this season, but like there's a smooth looking stroke there. I feel like simplifying things for him to allow him to not have to think so much about his offense while his defense is out there doing his defense thing. Like, that's the way to go. I don't know if we're going to see it this year. I mean, this is maybe just like a lost developmental year for Precious, the injury, the changing roles, all of that. Maybe it's too much to overcome, but there's certainly like a really good player there who, you know, before they got Yak, if you were still a Vision 6-9 believer, it's because you believed Precious Achiuwa could be the guy to tie it all together as the guy who could stir the drink as your big man in those lineups, who could bring those big man skills.
Yeah,
maybe the cat's out of the bag on the true big man skills for him, but there's obviously a lot for him to offer. Just hit some bloody threes, buddy. Like, not even 40% like it was at the end of last year. Just like 36. Give me 36%.
League average attempts. Like, I'll take it. Yeah,
man. It just would be so such a like a valuable addition to what they got going, and would give a different look and some just more malleability to the types of lineups they could play.
This is the pros and cons of having a read and react offense. A player like Fred could really thrive in it. However, other players that need some structure, you know, that don't need the leash off, they could probably have trouble understanding where their shots are supposed to come from. Like in that Clippers game, Scottie had a few mid-range shots where I'm sure he's just like, I don't usually shoot from here, and he missed them. He had several opportunities to hit some of those, and they were wide open for him, but they're along the baseline. I think there, I recall two of them late in the fourth quarter area. And I'm probably thinking that he's just like, I don't usually practice these shots. However, I mean, you want a player to be practicing from every spot on the court, but I think it would help, you know, a shooter, for instance, or anyone, if you know that you're going to get the ball around the baseline, around the 45, around the nail or whatever, and that's where you're going to be getting the ball on these particular sets, then it probably would increase your chances of being able to hit that shot. But that is the modern NBA, that is a modern offense where you want players to just make decisions a little bit faster and to be comfortable, you know, just throwing something out there and being innovative and creative, and talent never has never been better in the NBA. So I understand why you'd want to do that. You mentioned the 6'9 vision, 6'8. Final question for you. Do you think there will be fewer 6'8, 6'9 players on the Raptors next season?
It's a good question. I mean, I think like the core thinking behind Vision 6'9, if we're still calling it that, which I think it kind of became a misnomer a long time ago. Like
they had more 6'8 players anyways.
I claim that I'm the one who coined the term Vision 6'9. I'm pretty sure I am. I can't like confirm that. I think I was. I think I tweeted it on draft night when they took Scottie. And look, these things start in all sorts of different places, but like, you know, give me some royalties every time you use it, please. I may have not, I might be talking out of my ass here. Who's to say, but
you'd be a rich, rich
like
man.
The core principle of having tall, long players play the basketball, the sport where tall, long players have long been the most successful, makes a lot of sense to me. You just have to have the requisite skills that basketball players have used to great effect for a very long time. Point guard skills, center skills. If you could find a 6'9 guy who has legit point guard skills, obviously he should be your point guard. That's Magic Johnson. Maybe the best there ever was at that position. Like it makes a lot of sense to want tall players playing all of the positions. So I don't think they're going to try to get rid of them necessarily. There might just be like roster churn. You know, I think Thad probably won't be long for the team. He's got a non-guaranteed deal, I believe, or they could just waive him or cut him in, and it's all good and, you know, on the books and all that. That, and then again, Otto Porter Jr. probably coming back next year. So maybe that just replaces the Thad guy, like old forward guy who everyone likes, you know, who plays spot minutes or whatever. You know, I think it ultimately comes down to Pascal, OG, Scottie, Precious. Those are kind of the four long guys, right? I mean, Boucher's there too. I don't think Boucher is going anywhere. He's a pretty good value player for his deal. Maybe
he's exactly what you want.
Exactly perfect bench player. I don't think there's any reason to move on from Chris Boucher unless it's like a, you have to include him to complete a trade financially or whatever. But
right.
I would say, because even if they were to say, decide, okay, we got to trade Pascal Siakam here, they're probably trading him for a similarly sized player who just complements the team a little bit better, right? Like they're not going to go get a small wing, like a small like combo guard or something like that. Like can't see that being the thing they do. I think it'll be a like for like size wise. They're just trying to match skills a little better. So I'd say it's probably about the same. Like maybe they draft another 6'9 guy, which would be hilarious. it'd probably drive a bunch of people crazy. But I, you know, OG, I guess is the other one too. But again, if you're trading OG,
now
maybe that's the one case in which they
your
it does take a
big hit.
Now. And like I going into the deadline, I was pretty, you know, firmly like I think trading OG might be the move here. It's proactive. Like you get a good return. You can reassemble the roster around the rest of the guys and see how it works. Clearly his shooting's valuable. His defense is even more valuable. And I wonder if
he's been shooting unreal the past few games. Side note, his shooting the past few games has been really, really good.
Gorgeous. Yeah. And I wonder if maybe he's playing himself into obviously he's part of the plans. It was crazy to think about trading him ever just because of the fit. Again, he fits with anybody. He's a really malleable player to slot guys in alongside. He can play the two, he can play the four, he can play the three, he can play everywhere. And so I think you know, if you were to trade him, maybe that's the one situation where you're just kind of getting futures back and maybe not a like for like size guy or to drop it in his place.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're trading Pascal, trading Scotty in like some star trade, like it's probably for a guy of a similar ilk, just with a different sort of skill set or a little further along or different spot in their career. But
so I
would say that like the exact number, I don't know what the answer is, but I think in general, their liking of 6'8", 6'9", wing types is not going anywhere. I think as long as you have the bookends for those guys, actual point guard play, real center play, like it works.
Yeah.
But you got to have those bookends. And so, you know, if anything, mm-hmm. get more small guys so they can play point guard and run some actual offense for you.
I mean, that's where I kind of landed, actually, that I think it's going to be a similar amount, but I do think Christian Coloco should be a factor next season. At the very least, he'll probably be a stable member of the Raptors, maybe not rotation, but he'll be with the big club for most of the season. I guess he was for most mm-hmm. of the season too, but at this juncture of next season, he will still be with the team. I'll put it that way.
I agree.
And yeah. Agree. And then after that, I mean, I think the adding Will Barton, I think, kind of signaled that one, that they really want to make the most of this season, which is funny because they could have gotten a Will Barton type, you know, when the season started. Also, that they realized that they could use some more of that, those kinds of abilities, the backup point guard position. It's funny, like Scotty is a backup point guard, but he doesn't have the shooting, but you need shooting from a backup point guard type to, you know, give yourself more flexibility. So Scotty Barnes can thrive, you know, in the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. So maybe they have some sort of, like you mentioned, a combo guard, maybe it is, right? And they just have someone that can, like, you know, do some off-ball ball handling if need be, some secondary shooting, secondary whatever, while Scotty Barnes is doing his thing. And at the same time, that person could, you know, run some pick and roll and whatnot. Like, maybe that's it. But I think they do know that next season, considering they are in win now mode, they have to make an upgrade there. That's probably as far as I think it goes. They still are pretty committed. And you mentioned OG. I mean, I'm as curious as anyone, right? What's going to happen with him?
Because you watch the way that dude guards Jokic, and I'm thinking the playoffs are coming up. There are going to be potentially four teams that lose to Nikola Jokic in the playoffs, or, you know, multiple teams that run into Jokic and have no answer for him. And you come to the draft, and these teams are like, huh, this Jokic guy's a problem, huh? How do we deal with him?
Yeah.
Who around the league has shown that they can give him some trouble? Oh, the guy that might have been available at the deadline? Maybe we didn't pony up quite enough for him.
There you go.
Maybe we can now? Like, I don't know, man. Like, it's... I know it's like a horrible.
That's a good point. No, that's a good point. It's
all
in
flux. We have no idea what the hell the team is going to do. They're in this very weird corner. They have to thread the needle perfectly. It's very stressful as like a fan to like not know the direction of the team. It's also fascinating because they could go 1,000 different ways, and I think you could talk yourself into it. It's there's optionality in their lack of optionality, I suppose I would say. It's a really fascinating spot to be, and I truthfully have no idea how it's going to go. I think the next 15 games will tell us a lot. And honestly, like, I think we're talking the 46 minute mark of the Nuggets game is probably a way more optimistic tone to everything we've said here. But then Scott Foster happens, the Clippers game happens, and hey, it's a loss to the Clippers, whatever. Like, they played good minutes, they played bad minutes, blah 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 blah.
Yeah,
if there's 7-4 and not 6-5 through the first 11 games, even that small difference probably changes the overall tone.
Sure.
And hey, if they go win the next three,
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden it's like, damn, this team is on its way, and you can build on something here and bring everybody back, run it all back. We need these 15 games. The 26 games weren't even enough really to like get a full picture. To try to know the full picture after 11 of those 26 games feels like we're trying to jump a little too soon to jump to conclusions. But certainly all this information is important and valuable and is going to certainly dictate whatever the hell happens in the offseason. And if you ask me to handicap what's going to happen in the offseason, good luck. I have no idea. Like, 1,000 different things, like I said, could go down. Would not be shocked by any of them.
So many valuable players that could be off the team next season. It's a crazy thing. It's not very common that teams are going to deal with that in a situation like this. All right, man. Thanks so much for joining me. This was very much, very fun. You can find Sean Woodley on the Locked On Raptors podcast and on YouTube. Subscribe there as well. Closing thoughts, closing comment.
Yeah, we're just like very close to 3,000 subs on the YouTube channel, and I like round numbers. So please help push us over, and then I'll stop badgering people to keep on subscribing until the next time we get to a round number.
I'm going to make some accounts and I'll subscribe on those.
A beautiful, wonderful man you are. A true legend. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great weekend. The Raptors will beat the Lakers tonight. We'll talk soon.